When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Hello there and welcome back to another exciting episode of This Song Is Yours. I'm Simon Fink, your guide through all things music in 2024, and today we've got a true virtuoso joining us on the podcast. It's Molly Lewis, the world-renowned whistler extraordinaire. Now get ready to be blown away, no pun intended, because Molly is not your average whistler. With collaborations under her belt with the likes of Karen O from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Mac DeMarco, and even Dr. Dre, she has cemented her place as one of the most sought-after talents within the music industry. Let's also not forget her recent work on the Barbie soundtrack alongside Mr. Mark Ronson. But Molly's musical journey goes beyond just whistling. Inspired by foreign film scores and world music, she's set to release her debut album, On the Lips, later this week. It's a mesmerizing blend of old jazz club vibes, nostalgia, and exquisite instrumental arrangements that will transport you to another era. In today's episode, we sit down with Molly to uncover the secrets behind her remarkable whistling skills, paying homage to her whistling hero, Alessandra Alessandroni. We delve into her experience working on the Barbie soundtrack, and we also get a glimpse into her creative songwriting process. Now we want to give a huge shout out to Emma for making today's interview possible. And before we dive into the world of whistling wonders with Molly Lewis, please make sure you subscribe to This Song Is Yours on your favorite podcast platform. Stay tuned for more brilliant episodes throughout the year by following us across all social media channels. Details are waiting for you in today's show notes. So let's not keep you any longer. Let's dive into the world of Molly Lewis. Please welcome to This Song Is Yours, Molly Lewis. Molly, hello. How is it going?
Hello. Thanks for having me. I'm going very well, thanks.
Oh, look, my absolute pleasure in having you on the show, and thank you so much for coming on. I'm very excited to firstly just to have you on to chat, but also because of the what is happening this week. There is a brand new record from yourself coming out this Friday. It is called On the Lips. Firstly, congratulations on this this gorgeous record. How are you feeling with I imagine there's kind of a multitude of emotions and feelings going around at the moment.
Mainly just feeling a bit overwhelmed, but also, you know, excited. It's fun stuff. But yeah, a lot to think about and do around album release. I think that's what's kind of funny. It's, you know, I finished the music quite a while ago, but I will say I took a break from listening to it for a while just because I got a little bit over it after the mixing process, and hearing the songs again, I'm like, oh wow, it's pretty good, you know. I like it.
Well, firstly, I'm glad to hear that it does still stand up for yourself. It is a, as I said, it's a stunning record, and we were very lucky enough to have a listen to it before it's coming out this week. So thank you for that. Yeah. It's funny, we've spoken to a few artists where kind of what you said, that you'll finish recording and mixing this music and you've kind of got it sitting there in a folder on your hard drive, on your laptop, wherever it may be, for a period of time before people actually do get to hear it, which I can imagine, as you said, you then are sitting with this project yourself and kind of having all these thoughts and feelings with it. I guess once it does come out later this week, are you feeling that that's going to be a sense of relief that this is just out in the ether for people to enjoy?
Yeah. Yes, I will be relieved that, I guess the part of the process that I don't really like that. Like, I love making the music and the creative aspect. And then I guess, you know, the release stuff, it's just like the self-promotion and kind of pushing everything. It can be a little, you know, that doesn't come as naturally to me. So that's, I will be relieved that it's just out and people can just listen and, you know, enjoy it if they want. And yeah, there's something really nice about having it out in the world, especially these days. You know, as much as I have problems with the internet and social media, you know, I also, and also love the immediacy of it and being able to just kind of look, get messages from people all around the world or see, you know, where people are listening or talk to someone in Australia. And, you know, it is really lovely that music, it can travel so far so quickly and, you know, you can have this connection with people that way. So I am excited that people will get to listen and see how that goes.
I have a feeling that lots of people are going to be loving this album. And so I can very much appreciate that probably the release aspect, the press aspect, I very much know that it can be draining and daunting and a whole bunch of other feelings for that. So once again, we do appreciate you having a chat with us.
Oh, I didn't mean to, you know,
about this.
I love talking about myself. I'm happy to be here, but yeah, more just so like the kind of promotional, like posting and please buy my album, you know, that kind of stuff, which is like, ah, people can buy it if they want. I don't want to have to keep pushing this, but of course I want them to buy it. Please buy the album. Yeah. It's, that would be nice.
We will make sure that the links within the podcast show notes are available for everyone to pre-order the album, to buy the album, to see when you're touring, to be able to connect with you. So we'll make sure that that is possible for anyone who's listening to this conversation. As I've said, this is a stunning record. Molly, I'm curious for you, I know there was 2 EPs before this. When did you kind of, I guess, stumble upon that you were making the album, this full-length record?
Well, you know, it's funny because people keep bringing up the fact that, you know, this is the first LP, it's the first full-length, for me, it doesn't really feel that much different to putting out an EP. And I guess, you know, releasing the first EP a few years ago, it's the first time I've ever released music. And so that was a lot more daunting and I learned a lot more. So at this point, I feel a little bit, you know, like I know the ropes a bit better and more comfortable recording and writing and kind of knew the process a lot more than I did originally. So of course, the goal was always to make a full length, and the EPs were like a warm up. But it kind of happened quickly. Like some of the songs were things, little ideas and things that I'd had sitting around for years. One of the songs was something we'd recorded. I'd recorded with Tom Brennick, the producer who produced the last 2 EPs. He produced this and co-wrote a lot of songs. So we'd recorded something a few years ago that didn't make it onto one of the EPs and revisited it when we were working on this. And, you know, we're like, wait, this song's great. Let's chuck this one on. I think having time and space to look at things can sometimes be really great. But most of it we wrote around this time last year, around kind of, well, more like March, actually, March, April. But yeah, every song was kind of different. It's a big collaboration. You know, I worked with Tom and Roger again. Roger and I wrote most of the last EP, Mirage. He's a wonderful Brazilian musician. This one kind of felt like coming together of a lot of the different collaborators. And I'm not what was the question? Sorry. What am I talking about? The album?
Was there that feeling that you were recording a full-length record, or was it just, as you've kind of said, that it was just you were writing songs and it was, regardless of whether it's an EP or an album, that it was that composing and creating of music?
I mean, you know, I don't really know what the difference is, except it's like a few songs more, because the EPs were just as big to me and just as much of a musical world. This one, it has a few more songs on it, but it was kind of felt like the same process. You know, it's the writing and the studio work, and then also just kind of, for me, like coming up with a concept and an idea that brings all the music together, you know, because it's instrumental. So I like to kind of think of like, where does this belong, and what world are these songs part of, and, you know, where does this mood fit in? I'd kind of had the idea for what I wanted that to be for a while. So, you know, all the writing and everything kind of had that in mind, but it did happen quite quickly. I think we were just at the studio for a few months kind of playing around.
I love that. I do want to kind of touch on the recording process with Tom in a little bit as well, because I know that there was a bit of a revolving door of collaborators, and I do want to get to that. One little point that you just made then was that this music is instrumental. I did want to point out for anyone who's listening to the podcast that might not be across your music or your artist project, and please correct me if I get any of this wrong. I want to say that you're maybe one of, if not the world's most famous whistling artist. Is that the, have I phrased that correctly?
I'll take it. Sure. I'm a whistler. And I know that it's hard to explain. A lot of people don't know what that means because there aren't many whistlers, and most people haven't heard a whistler. I do think I'm probably the most prolific whistler of the moment. Mm-hmm. But there are a few other whistlers out there. I know them all. It's a small community. It is a very, very small community. I think I only know one other whistler who's doing it professionally, kind of full time.
It is an incredible, incredible talent. And I feel like, again, anyone who's not aware of your music, firstly, go check out Molly's music. It is incredible. But having a listen to it, it is an incredible talent that you do have, Molly. I'm wondering how you first kind of stumbled across this as your instrument, like how you came across, because I feel like some people can't whistle to begin with, or some can. And then, yeah, obviously, as you said, that there's a small batch of people who can do it professionally in a musician capacity. How did you stumble across your kind of your talent?
Well, It's a little murky for me. I get asked this question often, and so I do have a story, but I can't, you know, I remember whistling as a child, like most kids, you know, trying to make a sound and eventually getting it. And then I guess I must have been quite good at it. Because my parents showed me a documentary about a whistling competition when I was in high school. Mm. They obviously could tell it was something I was good at and that I liked doing. But until I saw this documentary and saw that there were other whistlers out there who were as good as I was, then not only could I whistle like them, but they were winning awards, you know. That's kind of when I finally could compare myself to something and, you know, realize that, oh yes, I was very good at it. Up until then I didn't really have much to compare it to, you know. It's just, yeah, I'm a good whistler, but what does that mean? The documentary was a big, seeing that was a big moment for me. I also got a CD of a professional whistler that, was big for me too, in the same way. And then also YouTube was kind of new in my high school years. And I remember I was following this whistler on YouTube name who went by Whistler's Brother, and he would do these like whistle tutorials, and we chatted a little bit. He told me about the whistling competitions, but up until hearing other whistlers and seeing these videos, I didn't really know what being a good whistler meant. So I'm sure I was whistling away, but I can't really remember how, you know, I can't remember that well.
How does, so going from that point into, I guess, where we are now, where was that, that moment of,
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Realizing that you are a fantastic whistler, but then turning that into your own compositions and your own music, like, were you also studying music at the same time that you were kind of coming across your talent?
No, this has been a long process. I grew up playing piano, so I love music. I always had a very good ear for music. I never learned to read music, even though, you know, teachers tried to teach me, because I could pick things out with my ear. So, and that's very helpful with whistling, of course, because I can hear something and I can play it. I didn't study music. I didn't go to school for music. I was not very good at any other instruments. And so I never really thought I could be a musician, or that I was a musician. When I first started doing little performances and things, it was, like, the first one was a competition where you whistle covers. And then when I moved to Los Angeles, I started doing this kind of live act with a band. And the first show was a tribute to Alessandro Alessandroni, who was my favorite, my whistling hero. If you don't know Alessandroni's work, most people would have heard him because he was the whistler for all of Morricone's scores. Mm. So, like, that's Alessandroni. But he also wrote a lot of incredible compositions, and he wrote compositions for whistle. And when he died, I wanted to put on a tribute night to his work, because I felt like I was the only one who might be able to perform it, and so that was my first foray into live performing with a band. And so for many years I was just doing covers, and, you know, the live show kind of went from this Italian soundtrack tribute to more of a lounge, like jazz covers, bossa nova covers, just covers of any songs that I loved and felt would translate well as a whistle. Like, we've even done opera or classical pieces. I guess I slowly started kind of, you know, I'd hear melodies in my head and I'd make voice messages of them without knowing what to do with that. And when I met Tom Brennick, who, incredible musician and producer, he was very encouraging of this in a way that, you know, I just felt like my little melodies and ditties were like super basic and not anything. Quite self-conscious about it too. You know, it's music. It feels very personal. Mm-hmm. You know, it's coming from you. It's your own expression. And, it's like writing poetry. Like, I don't know, sometimes I write things I would never show anyone. So, yeah, I felt like that with my my melodies. But I met Tom and he just really made it such a fun and exciting process. You know, he heard, I had this one little melody that I'd written. I started playing guitar during the pandemic, not very well, but I could, you know, I've got the chords down and I could write songs. Oh, it helped me write melodies over the guitar chords. And I took one to Tom when we were in the studio because, you know, and he helped turn it into one of my songs that's called Oceanic Feeling that was on my first EP. My first EP was supposed to be covers. I thought it was just going to be covers. And I started writing music with Tom and started making, you know, bringing these original pieces. And he helped me, you know, flesh them out and, you know, showed me how they could become full songs. Like, oh, yeah, let's add a sax solo in the middle and, you know, come back to the verse and there you go. That's a song. You know, it was a lot simpler than, not that it's simple, but it wasn't as daunting, you know, when I had such a wonderful collaborator and champion and someone who could really, who was so helpful in helping this come to life.
100%. I feel like it's almost sometimes the hurdles that we put up in our own mind of like that it's, as you said, it's not as daunting or difficult as maybe originally thought. It's that thing of doing it itself. I was hoping to, if I might be so bold as to kind of ask about my favorite track on the record. This record, it is sonically just stunning. I know that it's probably I know that before we started recording, we were talking about how early it is here in Australia at the moment. I did spend most of last night trying to work out the best way to put it, and maybe it was tiredness, whatever we want to call it. There's a certain old Hollywood noir sound to this record, and I'm not sure if that's lazy. I apologize if it is, but it was the best way I could encapsulate it in a short kind of sentence.
No, that's great. I love that.
Oh, cool. Perfect. Great. the track that I just found myself kept coming back to was Moon 10. There is a beauty in this song. There is almost like a little bit of sadness in the song as well. And I was wondering if you could just talk us through the creation or the inspiration or how this kind of song came to be.
Oh, so cool. This is what's fun about having music out there. It's like, because I wasn't expecting you to say that one. I don't know why not, but it's fun hearing what, you know, the things that people are drawn to and the different songs that capture people. Yes. Okay, wait, I'm just going to listen. Oh yeah, Moon 10. Okay, so I need to listen to it because a lot of the times we have these working titles for the songs yeah, that one. So that one, gosh, that was one that I wrote. I wrote the chords and the melody. I think that was, you know, so my guitar playing has slightly advanced over the years since I started playing in the pandemic. There's certain chords that I just really go back to. I feel like if you were to listen to the songs that I've written the chords for, they're probably all the same. It's like, you know, E minor, A7, you know, just these kind of melancholy, like beautiful chords. If I want to change it up, I just put a capo on and I do the same chords just somewhere else. But, so that one, yeah, that one really, I'd had this kind of melody and guitar, but because I'm not a trained songwriter, music, you know, I feel like I get to a certain place and then I don't know where to go. Like I had this like round of chords and this melody. And then I'm usually like, okay, Tom, like what do we do now? You know, and how do we make this into a real song? And, so I think, you know, I'd brought that in and we, what's fun about the studio and Tom's way of working too is there's always musicians hanging out. There's session musicians. There's people who are making their own records. There's people who just come by who he's played with before who want to hang. And so, yeah, this Roger Joseph Manning Jr., amazing keyboard player, and Joe Harrison, wonderful multi-instrumentalist, they were in the studio, and yeah, we kind of I hate the word jam, but like, you know, worked out kind of a middle section break after the verses. And Michael Jerome Moore, who's a drummer, percussionist, and friend who I've been playing with for many years. He played at some of my first shows in LA. He'd come to the studio to record the drums. And yeah, you know, we kind of put down like the basic parts of the song, and then Joe and Roger started doing this like incredible, I don't even know what Joe was doing with the, he had like a coin on the guitar strings and he was making this really interesting sound. I wonder if there's a word for what he was doing. I don't even know, but like you can hear it. There's this very interesting, strange sound in the song. And that was Joe, and, you know, in the room with Roger kind of putting on these overdubs and like really going wild. Like I remember, I mean, it's not hardly wild, but, you know, for me, I was in the control room with Tom and we were listening to what they were adding. And it was, we were just like, that's what's so fun. You know, we were in there just being like, oh my God, like keep going. You know, it was just so beautiful what they were doing. And yeah, so that's what I remember about Moontan. I forget what its working title was, but that name now is kind of a tribute to Piero Umiliani, one of my favorite composers. He has a album and all these compositions called Pelle di Luna, and that means Moontan in Italian. So yeah, so that was my little reference to Umiliani. Not that the song, you know, has anything, you know, it takes a candle to the great Umiliani, but yeah, that's where that comes from. And that's just a little bit about that song. Yeah, I'm glad you liked it.
Thank you very much for sharing that. That was awesome. It is like a stunning, stunning track. And the whole album, as I've said, I'll stop singing your praises in a second. But yeah, it is.
It's yeah, please. It's annoying. Enough praises.
Simon, be professional, please. Come on. As you kind of mentioned with Thomas, that there was like people dropping by the studio. I know, who was it? Members from Bad, Bad, Not Good and the Sacred Souls kind of came by. I know that they've all kind of contributed or collaborated on the record in some way. And I know that you yourself have collaborated with quite a range of artists, which I found really fascinating. I think that there was quite a lot of composers, quite a lot of world music artists. And then there was artists like Dr. Dre or Mac DeMarco, which is just like this, it's a stunning repertoire. How do you find collaborating with people with whistling? And I guess, how do they approach you, I guess, do you get sent some really strange pitches on what people kind of want you to contribute to their project?
Yeah, I mean, this is what I've loved about what I do. You know, I do feel like whistle kind of this instrument that I use, it does kind of transcend lots of musical genres. You know, you can use a whistle across any type of music, and I have at this point. But it is so fascinating getting to work with different artists, seeing how they work. And I think I've just learned so much from this, from going to different studios and, seeing the process. I guess for the most part, I've also learned a lot about making music and improvisation because of this, because I think, you know, mainly sometimes people have a clear idea of what they want me to do, and I'll get a pure melody or line that they want me to play. But most of the time it's a combination of they want me to try something and improvise something and see what happens. And do the melody that they've thought of, or even just improvise. So, which when I first started doing it was very scary because I'd never really done that in front of people. And again, it feels quite, it's a little, you know, it feels personal. But when you're being hired by someone and going to their studio and it's someone like Dr. Dre, or, you know, and you just want to kind of do the best thing you can and try your hardest. That doing sessions and things like that, I feel really threw me into the deep end of like thinking on my toes and like having to kind of come up with things. That's kind of, it's been an interesting part of it.
Of course, I can only imagine. As I said, the repertoire is quite eclectic, quite an incredible kind of list of artists. I think Karen O was on there as well. We love Karen O from the AES. There is one that I do want to ask about very quickly, which is somewhat of an obvious one. I believe that you had a part in the billion-dollar franchise that is the Barbie movie, working with Mark Ronson and Andrew. How did that kind of come about, contributing to the score of Barbie?
So Tom worked with Mark on the score. He'd gone to New York to do some session stuff for the soundtrack, and Mark had asked him for my phone number. And when Tom came back, and we were in the process of recording the album at the time, and it was kind of like crunch time too. Like we were every day kind of had to be in there, and Tom told me Mark was going to give me a call, and he was like, expect an interesting phone call. And I was like, oh God, like what could this be about? And, you know, Mark called, and he had this piece that had a very clear melody. It's the melody that Billie Eilish wrote for the song, for her song on the soundtrack. What Was I Made For, this piece. And so Mark and Andrew had made a variation on this song that was going to be part of this score and play at a part in the movie where Barbie kind of goes back in time. So they wanted it to feel like a 30s kind of orchestral version of this song. And Mark told me, you know, he thought a whistle as the melody would be perfect. And I was like, yes, I agree. I think that would be perfect. I think we should do this. He kind of got me to send a little demo so we could get approval from Greta Gerwig. And luckily she was into it. And then they were like, can you be in New York tomorrow to record? And luckily, I think, you know, there was like, it was the weekend and there was some reason that we did have a break in like, you know, our album schedule. Thank goodness there I could go ahead and record on this, because it was a really fun session job. The piece is just like, it was a joy to whistle on this. It's like a dream whistling over this 70-piece orchestra. It's so lush and moving. It really feels like kind of these old Disney soundtracks of back in the day. That was really, really fun and a great experience.
That's incredibly awesome. Thank you for sharing that story with us. It is, yeah, there's a beautiful nostalgia in that track, even though it was, as you said, recorded only in like the last year or so. The orchestra, the melody line whistled by itself just makes it this kind of incredibly timeless little piece. So thank you very much for sharing that. Molly, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. I do appreciate it. Congrats again on The Lips. It's out later this week. Super excited for everyone to be able to hear it. But thank you again for chatting with us today.
Thanks, Simon. Thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.